We did find the doctor who was there that night, and he told us the story that I put on camera, that people came down out of nowhere, strangers, he said. No one knew who they were, shouting there was a chemical attack, that dying and everything, and so they started washing them off with water, and it was the White Helmets who brought them down and started filming. And they said when they were done, they stopped filming, and everybody just left. And there was, you know, the kids they had brought were cold and shivering and wondering what the heck had happened. And one kid was brought up and given cookies and a date, like, you know, date figs and stuff.
Good Lord.
And just rewarded for being on the video, and that was it.
So, folks, this is the video that you were shown over and over and over, looped on Fox News, looped on CNN, looped on MSNBC. You were shown over and over and over and over again as prima facie evidence of a chemical weapons attack. Now, when you got there, the first day you went in there, you went, when did you realize that you were standing in the same room that other video had been filmed in? Because you actually say that. You go, this is the room. This is the clinic where the White Helmet, I don't know if you said White Helmet, where the internationally circulated video was filmed. Did you know that before you went in the tunnel, or when you got there and you saw it with your eyes, you went, wait a minute, I've seen this place before?
Well, they told us it was the terrorist hospital, the rebel hospital, but I didn't put two and two together until I got down there, and I was like, yeah, this looks familiar. And then Abdul was like, this is where they filmed the video. Yeah, hey, it is.
this story is absolutely incredible to me, and I'm sure it's incredible to many other people. And then the next thing we know is your filming of the clinic scene, and then you leave the clinic, and you go somewhere else in Douma, and then you find guys, and you're trying to find evidence of the attack. You're trying to find bodies, or you're trying to find people that are sick. And you filmed all these interviews, as you said. You keep asking people, hey, do you know about this? Did you find anyone that had any knowledge of the attack the whole time you were there?
Well, people said they only through the media. They'd only heard about it on TV and things like that. And there have been other reports on CNN and Fox and stuff where I guess they found someone who said, yeah, the attack happened and I was there. And when I asked them about that, they said, no, those people were paid. They were paid to say that. And I've heard about that before, that other reporters have offered people money, sometimes over $1,000. Imran Awan, the little boy, the famous little boy who's in the back of the ambulance van, beat up after an attack. His father was apparently offered over $1,000 by a reporter to talk about how much he hated Assad and how Assad had done this to him. So it's not unprecedented that reporters pay Syrians to say what they want on camera. And these people, I mean, you've seen their cities have been destroyed. They have nothing. So when you've got someone coming in offering you $1,000 to say this or that on camera, I mean, you don't care. Like, you can feed your family for, you know, 2 months on that. I think that'd be a logical choice for a lot of people. But yeah, none of the people that I interviewed had seen anything or heard anything other than what they saw on TV. And a lot of them, I interviewed some that you saw on camera. They just laughed. They said it was funny. It didn't happen. They couldn't believe that people were believing this sort of thing.
Pearson Sharp is with the OAN television network and was a correspondent on the ground in Douma, Syria, and in other parts of Syria about a month or so ago. He was on our Dewmaker hotline with us. We only have a few minutes left. Pearson, one of the other things that I got out of your interviews was, and just came across, I thought, very well, was your impression of people that you met in Syria as being kind, gentle, warm, not cowering in fear, looking around. Mm-mm. I didn't see anyone looking over their shoulders going like, oh, man, you shouldn't stand here. Assad's coming to kill all of us. But you did show the human side that these people are like us. They don't like living in that city, but they were dealing with it. And they seem to be genuine, warm human beings, right? Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely correct. These people are, I mean, you know, these are the kind of people you want to go out and have a barbecue with. They're really easygoing. They're very funny. They're very funny people. My translator, Abdul, was a very funny guy. And they weren't afraid of the soldiers, like people say they are. They love the soldiers. The soldiers saved their lives. Of course they do. And despite everything, they love America. None of them said anything bad about America. I mean, I was there at one point with some soldiers who'd been in the city, and they asked where I was from, and I said, America. And he sort of like smiled and nodded and said, we love America. We love America. And I, you know, I don't think I'd be that gracious if I was in their shoes, but they are. There was another soldier I walked up to and asked for directions. There's military outposts everywhere.
Right.
And I asked him for directions to this restaurant. He looked around and he said, come with me. And he walked me 6 blocks down to this restaurant. He just walked me there. And I said, you really don't. You can just tell me where to go. He's like, no, I'm going to go this way anyways. And he took me there himself. And then I think he was just being polite, because then as soon as we got there, he turned around and walked back to the outpost. So, I mean, these people are really friendly. They want to do everything they can to help, and they want us to help them. And I don't think that's too much to ask.